Empower Radio presents The Butterfly Moment. It's the classic quantum leap in personal growth. Now here are your hosts for The Butterfly Moment, John Shelter and Carrie Hall on Empower Radio.
Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon to everybody. This is John Shelter, and I'm here on our show, The Butterfly Moment. Unfortunately, I'm flying solo today. Carrie's out of town, and so my partner in crime will not be here to support with questions and critiques at the end of the show, but I'll do the very best that I can. For you folks who've never listened before, this show talks to extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. It is a show that believes in the butterfly moment. I have the best job in the world. It's my favorite time of the week. The rest of the time, I'm a writer and a lawyer, but it is so unbelievable to be able to connect with people, with the ideas that I have in my writing, with very special friends and special guests. It's just great. And I remind you that if you'd like a copy of this, you can go on the site Empower Radio, and everything is archived, or you can contact me at JJ Shalter, S-C-H-A-L-T-E-R, at gmail.com, and I can send you a link. And you can listen to this show. There's a lot of great shows that are also archived. It's almost like YouTube, only using the voice, where you can just spend time about listening to people's thought-provoking inspiration. And now the butterfly moment. The reason that this show is called The Butterfly Moment is because I'm part of the Butterfly Foundation, and in thinking through that name, I've realized that it's a very special insect, and it's a very special metaphor of something that I deeply believe in. You know, the caterpillar, when it enters the cocoon, basically is going there to die. And after a period of time, its life forces cause it to open up, and it begins to escape from the cocoon, and it has a realization. And that realization is that it's not what it thought it was. It's not a caterpillar. That it's perhaps one of the most beautiful insects in the world. And best of all, it can fly. Well, here on Empower Radio, on the butterfly moment, we talk to people about that moment in their own lives, in their own striving, in their own careers. Carrie and I are life coaches. We love to give you a free session and explore your own butterfly moment. This would be 55 minutes of focus totally on you. And at that time, we can discuss your hopes and dreams, maybe what's standing in your way, what visions you may have, like Walt Disney, and what strategies that you may be engaged in to try to get there. You know, the great thing about achieving goals, it's kind of like going to a restaurant and ordering food. If you went to the restaurant and ordered food and you looked up the waitress and said, "I'm really hungry," she would say, "Okay, well, what do you want?" And if you replied again, "I'm really hungry," she probably would leave in frustration. Because it's not enough just to want a good life. You have to be very specific. And if you pointed to the pancakes, the scrambled eggs, the hamburgers and fry, you're going to get it. Well, the universe works the same way. It loves clarity. It loves people who know what they want. And so as you approach your life, what's on your menu? What are your hopes and dreams? So if you'd like to discuss that strategy You can contact me through my own website, butterflycoaches.com or Empower Radio, or my own cell phone, 248-586-HELP, H-E-L-P. Yeah, I'd love to talk to you, and we can discuss your hopes and dreams. Well, we've got a very, very special guest today. As you probably know, I have a background as a personal injury lawyer. And there's a fellow that I've known for a long time that has made his mark in the legal field as both a personal injury lawyer and a trial lawyer. He's had groundbreaking cases in an area that is so important to both the plaintiff's victims and that area of the law. I'm sure that he can explain that further. His name is Steve Luchman. Now, Steve has been a lawyer for over 45 years, University of Michigan graduate, both in law school and in undergrad. I won't hold that against him. I'll never have Harbaugh on the show. Maybe D'Antonio, but my loyalties are to Michigan State. And Steve is presently in practice in Bingham Farms as a personal injury lawyer. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Steve, thanks for...
Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon. Thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate that. And, you know, this is a conversation. This is a conversation about a very important area of the law, a very important area of a lot of people's lives, and that's, personal injury. Tell us a little bit about your background. Are you from Michigan, and where are you from?
I am. I grew up in Redford around Plymouth and Telegraph, went to Thurston High School, and then on to Michigan, where I was on the track team at Michigan, and then was fortunate enough to get into Michigan's law school, and then went into practice as a lawyer.
You know, there's
one thing.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. Well, one thing that you forgot to mention, there's something special about your high school career on the track team, correct?
Yes, I was all state 2 years, and still hold my high school's record. Something I'm kind of surprised at and proud of at the same time.
That's great. How far was it anyway?
I was a shot putter. I threw 56-3. In high school, and then they add 4 pounds to the weight that you're throwing in college, and I did 55 feet in that and was third in the Big Ten.
Wow. You know, I coached high school track for 2 years, and so I had to coach the shot putters, and I was always amazed at the athleticism, the strength, and everything that's involved in shot putting. It's really, it's an athletic endeavor, you know, the speed, the power, all that kind of stuff. I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm sorry. People think of shot putters as people who just throw a big ball a certain distance and that there isn't skill involved. It's a lot like a golf shot where you have to time a bunch of different things at once, and a little bit of a metaphor for at least what I do for a living. Where in cases where I represent people, you really have to do 5 or 6 things at once. We're in a multitasking business. You have to watch deadlines and look out for this or that or the other thing and be proactive and reactive. So I think throwing the shot in high school was kind of good practice for realizing the synchronicity of things that one has to do. And I'm sure law is not the only example.
Yeah.
As a working adult.
Well, plus it's kind of like firing a cannon. You know, you gotta have take aim, and you have to be very specific. Well, as you went through law school, how did it happen that you got into personal injury?
Well, I wanted to try cases, and criminal law, for whatever reason, didn't appeal to me, and working for the government didn't appeal to me. I One way a lot of people who want to try cases start out often is as a prosecutor, because you get plenty of opportunity there. But I don't know. It just didn't appeal to me. And the other way to try a large number of cases, and I was very competitive, and it was a more competitive age then, was to get into personal injury law, because at that time people were trying 20 cases a year. And I liked the arena. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a lot different from sports. I grew up watching Perry Mason, and to me, a lawyer was a guy who went to court.
Yeah.
Or a gal.
Yeah. And I see that you were a defense counsel first, if I'm correct?
Yes. I worked for a firm that mainly represented a couple insurance companies and defended automobile accidents and slip and falls and other cases like that. It was satisfying in the sense that it gave me the opportunity to go to court, but I always empathized more with individuals who were hurt than with the insurance companies who were holding on to the money and deciding who to pay and who not to. So ultimately, I transitioned over to representing plaintiffs.
Was that with Summer Schwarzsilver?
Yes, it was.
Tell us a little bit about that firm, because it has quite a legacy.
It does. I started out working for a fellow named Stanley Schwartz, who is he's deceased now, but he was a legendary medical malpractice lawyer and a true believer in securing the rights of people who were unfortunately the victims of medical negligence. And medical negligence, unfortunately, kind of like rape, is one of the most underreported negative things that can happen. For every case that goes to court or that somebody sees a lawyer about, there are probably 10 times when a doctor makes an error and it has a catastrophic effect where it just never comes to light. The people don't think to sue, or they think that it's just, they don't deserve any better. But in any event, it took people, pioneers like Stan,
right,
and other people in other states to make the public aware that they had rights in pursuing cases against doctors who seriously harmed them, that it was better for the public to bring bad medical acts to light and remove incompetent physicians, and that it increased the efficacy, the usefulness of healthcare. Healthcare improved the more doctors had to be accountable.
You know, what seemed to be very groundbreaking, and I believe this was in the 80s, is that you and Stan, and I think that you were primarily the trial lawyer arm of this, were doing what then was called baby cases, correct?
Yes.
And there was a lot of big verdicts and a lot of care that is being given, probably even today, to innocent victims, particularly babies, that would need help for the rest of their life because of the negligent malpractice of some of the doctors, correct?
Absolutely. And it's one of the, any work that you do, particularly as a lawyer, but, you know, physicians, I think, feel the same way. And anyone who does things that help people, carpenters, anyone who can make somebody's life better, either in a small increment or large, that's the most rewarding thing of what we do. Now, if somebody has a sore neck and misses work for a couple months, that's important to them, and I and other lawyers can help them. But the really satisfying aspect of law to me is the ability to help a person who is catastrophically injured or has lost a loved one or has a child who will need help for the rest of his or her life. And in handling these cases where there were errors in labor and delivery and in the NICU, we were able to secure people's futures so that they they weren't dependent on taxpayers, dependent on negative changes in the law, but they could have annuities that would enable them to live a normal life, and better, more importantly, enable their child to be taken care of and have some dignity in her or his life.
Sure. You know, boy, it must have been 10 years ago. I went to a trial law seminar, and Robert Kennedy Jr. was one of the speakers. And he was big at that time into toxic tort. And his message to the trial lawyers was that, gentlemen, you are agents to change. We can't rely on the government. We can't rely on other forces within our society. That the best way to get large corporations to change their ways in apparently the toxicity of things like today would be Flint water is the legal system. Because the government system gets bogged down in relationships, in party politics, and on, where you slap a $100 million verdict on somebody, a corporation, they're going to change.
Well, a classic example of that is when you and I were children, John,
mm-hmm.
The population of the United States was well under 200 million. It was probably 150 million. And there were 50,000 fatal accidents a year. Now this country is 325 million people or more, and people drive everywhere, and they drive faster than they did back when we were kids. But there are only about 30 to 40,000 fatal accidents a year. And the reason is automobile safety has increased dramatically. And the underlying reason for that is that the auto companies were made accountable by trial lawyers and forced to build safe cars, because if they didn't and somebody was killed or paralyzed, they had to pay a large price for it.
Mm.
And accountability fostered responsibility, and we as a country have gained immeasurably because of it.
I see. You know, somebody's out there listening, and they have a potential case where someone has been seriously hurt through a truck crash, a medical incident, that type of thing. You would meet with them concerning their case, I assume.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, you have how many years of experience, Steve?
I am into my 46th year.
You really want to admit that, Steve? That's great.
Well.
And you've had over 60 million in verdicts and settlements, correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah, well over that.
Well. So what would they do, Steve? How did they get a hold of you?
Well, just call my office. The number is 248-723-1456. And usually either I or one of my two assistants, Lisa Paul or Gilbert Aguilera, will answer the phone, or they can leave a message and we will get back to them quickly. Another alternative is send me an email. It's leuchlaw@gmail.com.
I see.
We try to be as responsive as we can, and I really consider it a privilege to represent people who have suffered, you know, legitimate serious injuries that due to somebody who has been negligent.
Well, Steve, I've seen you in action, and I can tell the people out there that no one is more personable, no one works harder than Steve, and he is just a great, great a trial lawyer that's going to get you the verdict in the amount that you deserve. And in my view, there's no replacement of experience. And when you have had that amount of experience and that kind of verdict, it speaks for itself. We're kind of running out of time, but tell us about super lawyers. What does that mean?
Well, that's I'd say it's an honorary listing that comes out every year. The publishers of super lawyers, or the people who run the program, ask all the lawyers in the state, and they do this in all 50 states, basically who are the top 5% of practicing lawyers. And then people who are elected to super lawyers are honored by, you know, being named to that and by being named in a publication that comes out listing the people who are believed by their peers, by other lawyers, to be at the top of their profession.
And I mention that because for several years running, you have been a super lawyer, correct?
I have been fortunate enough to have that designation. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, well, you should be. That's wonderful. Now, as the magical question that I ask all of my guests, what was your butterfly moment, you know, whether it relates to law or something else that was important to you in your life, where you experienced that you were not who you thought you were, that you were potential and that you were something more, and that there was big and beautiful things for you?
Well, I represented in, I think, 1986, a fellow named, a very exceptional man named George Hollis. George was a GM worker, and at the time you could work 30 years and then retire on a pension, and he had worked 28 and a half years. More importantly, excuse me, he was an ordained Baptist minister, and he started out having services in his home, 5, 6, 10 people, and ultimately over the years, his son and the husbands of two of his daughters physically built a church and built up a congregation, George did mainly, of over 500 people.
Wow.
And it was Reverend Hollis's dream when he retired to go to the Holy Land, to see Lake Galilee with his own eyes and Jerusalem and all of the wonderful sights that are there. Unfortunately, he struck his head at work, thought of it as a minor thing, went to a doctor who said, well, you're just having a headache. It's no big deal. And it worsened over the next month. And it turned out that he had a subdural hematoma, which is bleeding into the brain. And if a subdural hematoma is unchecked, the blood will take over the inside of a person's head. It'll squeeze the brain down, to the point where damage can occur or the person can be killed. In Mr. Hollis's case, a doctor put him in to the hospital thinking he just had headaches and the flu. And fortunately, unfortunately, he was put in basically to be warehoused. But fortunately, another physician saw him. They did a surgery that saved his life. But the blood in his brain had pushed down on his cerebral cortex to the point where he was blind. So the family came to us and asked us to help them out. And we filed a lawsuit. And amazingly, the offer was minimal. It was less than $200,000, nothing that was going to really help Mr. Hollis and his family cope with his blindness or compensate him for the loss of his active ability to preach, although he still did, of course. In any event, we went to trial, and the trial went really well for 4 or 5 days. I sat down with Stan Schwartz the day before we were going to I was going to argue the case and ask for a verdict. And when you ask for a verdict, you typically tell the jury how much you want. And Stan said, well, are you going to ask for $1.5 million or two? And this was a while ago. And here comes the butterfly moment. It hit me. Between his question and my answer, I said, no, Stan, I'm going to ask for $6 million. And he was just, wow. Well, good luck with that. And so I went into court the next day, suddenly convinced that I could do that, that I wouldn't take the approach that most lawyers at the time took, where they asked for, you know, $1 million or $1.5 million and considered it, you know, manna from heaven if they got it. I asked the jury for $6 million, and they gave my clients $5,085,000.
Wow.
And we ended up, as it happened, because of interest and cost, collecting exactly $6 million. And that was my butterfly moment. I had the sudden realization talking to my mentor, to a man who really was a far greater lawyer than I ever thought I could be. deciding I can shoot higher on this. I can really help this family.
Wow.
Or ask the jury to really help this family. And it materialized.
That's great.
That was my big epiphany in the practice of law.
Well, we're almost running out of time, but what a way to end. You know, it kind of follows up on my restaurant menu thing where at that time, not only did you have a butterfly moment, but you had clarity of what you wanted. And so you could point to the menu and say, bring me this, and the jury did it, right?
Exactly. And if you don't have the confidence to do that, it isn't going to happen.
Yeah. Well, Steve, this has been a great interview. Thank you so much for being on our show. I would hope that if you have a serious case involving serious issues, give Steve a call, and I'm sure we could set some sort of meeting up. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye.